You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
702 and Cape Talk. Family Matters.
18 minutes after 11 in today's Family Matters, we're going to be talking about empathy, which I think we can all do with more of, particularly in this country of ours. And I'm joined by Hayden Nipps, clinical psychologist. Did I get your surname right?
You did. Thank you.
Fantastic. The silent K.
That's correct.
Hayden, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Now, a perennial question that will always get in the way when we talk about empathy, that I want us to get out of the way, if we can, quickly. I'm not sure. I was trying to think in my head back to philosophy lectures, what the difference is between empathy and sympathy.
Okay, wow. Yeah, the difference between empathy and sympathy, essentially, empathy is placing yourself in somebody else's shoes and understanding what their experience is, essentially. Sympathy is from your own shoes, how you feel about it, if it is that you feel sorry for them.
Okay.
So the difference, they're actually dramatically different concepts. We do constantly get them confused, and people seem to think if you say, oh, shame, shame, that's empathy. That is not. Empathy is the understanding.
Mm.
Sympathy is how you feel sorry for them.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, I was saying to my producers this morning when we were just having a look at what's coming up on the show, that this is an interesting discussion. Sometimes we have snot and trana in Family Matters because we try and improve people's lives and do our little bit for our community of Cape Talk and 702 listeners. And when you talk about things that are more obviously the subject matter of clinical psychology, whether we talk depression, anxiety, how to deal with a violent past, loss and that kind of thing, immediately people go, yeah, I'm going through loss. I'm going through this, that or the other. With empathy, a lot of people may not understand why this topic matters. And yet in many ways, I think a lack of empathy is responsible for a lot of friction in our society. How would you describe why this conversation is as important as, say, talking about alcoholism, loss, or all the other typical issues that we normally psychologize?
Absolutely. I would say, obviously, I agree with you with the importance of empathy. Probably the single most important concept in psychology is empathy. This is because all of those things you've mentioned and more and whatever we, you know, don't cover, it will have at least a degree that empathy plays in it. Empathy is probably the single most important element to understanding human behavior, to assisting people in what it is that they're going through. It really is the cornerstone of how we function.
And without being glib about all those other political, economic, and social issues, if we activated our empathetic capacities better and showed more empathy towards one another, I would imagine that many of the problems that seem intractable in interpersonal relations, institutionally, we probably would stand a better chance of dealing with them.
Yes, it's highly likely that they would be dealt with. In fact, they may not even exist. Because if we have all, let's say if we had a magic wand and everybody in the country and the world had extremely deep levels of empathy, that would mean that everybody understands everybody else's perspective. And they will probably develop a compassion for it as well. And there is a lack of threat, because to be violent is unlikely if you truly understand somebody else. To have divides, all of this will essentially melt away. Of course, I'm talking about a magic wand exaggeration here.
We'll unpack in the rest of the hour what one can do in the absence of the magic wand to try and develop that, right? But I want you to call in. I want you to reflect maybe the first couple of minutes you're listening. But as you're listening to this conversation, how would you rate your own ability to empathize in general? And obviously, by definition, I think the hardest cases are being empathetic towards people who live very different lives to your own, who look differently to yourself. And have you ever thought about this part of your own character or disposition? And what have you done, if you have thought about it before, to make yourself more empathetic? 011-883-0702. Give us a call in Joburg and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. If we stay with this imagery of putting myself in your shoes, how do I learn to do that better?
Yeah, well, depending on therapeutically, we facilitate this if it's necessary, clinically indicated. But if we start sort of from scratch, somebody that really struggles with it, very difficult for them to put themselves in anyone's shoes. The first concept that we try to build in is the concept of frame of reference. This refers to the fact that each and every human being views the world from a different perspective, if we can say that.
Yeah.
Often I give a city example of, imagine you've never seen a car in your life, or two people haven't, and there's a photograph of the car from two different angles. Each person would explain what they're looking at completely differently. One might say it has, you know, two circles. They might not even know it's wheels. You know, they'll explain the shape different. If somebody sees it from the top view, they wouldn't even talk about the wheels. So we would have very different understandings, but both are simultaneously true. Something that we commonly forget is that if somebody holds a different perspective, it therefore cancels ours, and that is not the truth. Two can simultaneously be true. Once you start to accept that and understand that is a reality of human functioning, then you go the next step of saying, okay, if I was in that situation, if I, whatever the example is, how would I feel? And you start to imagine that. Once you can piece that together, you can think, sure, I'd feel angry or hurt or something like that. But it doesn't usurp your experience. Let's say person A comes home and says something very hurtful, but they are very angry or angry about something else from earlier. You know, when person B is hurt and they voice the pain, let's say, or they show the hurt, person A often will justify it. No, but I was angry, that's why. But it is true that person A was angry.
Sure.
They did it for these reasons. But simultaneously true is if you put yourself in person B's shoes and you imagine, if I was that, if my day was there and somebody busted in and said this hurtful thing, how would I feel? You can see that you can also accept that that is also the truth. That is how we begin the concept of empathy.
Actually reminded me of one of my favorite American philosophers, Thomas Nagel, who writes about the view from nowhere, which in moral reasoning is an attempt to try to decenter yourself in reasoning through how to behave as a morally conscious person in the world.
Lovely.
And the other famous paper he wrote as a preliminary to that is, what is it like to be a bat? I think someone recently wrote an interesting version. What is it like from the inside being Donald Trump, and just took the Mickey out of it. But I think, you know, and I'm smiling a little because I'm thinking back to the first hour of my radio show today. We had a couple of men who just struggle to be empathetic in the struggle for gender equality. And I think as you are speaking and talking about someone else's perspective, have we become worse in a digital era, or has digital platform simply reveal to us what's always been the case? Have we become more egotistical? Because it seems to me, if we cut through this stuff, right? And I mean, you're speaking plainly, but if we are brutally honest about what's going on in society, it would seem to me that we are living through a time in the world where everything is about me. Hayden's perspective. Hayden is in pain. Hayden is unemployed. Hayden is this. And what Joanne might be feeling doesn't even enter Hayden's purview. And it seems to me like we in a sense, going through a crisis of people being incredibly egotistical and thinking that it's – some people would even think that you're asking them to do something that is an infringement on their dignity to consider someone else's perspective.
Yes. Yeah, there's a lot in what you're saying. The context of online or website based information that we're receiving, that's a whole nother. I mean, that we would need to go into the critical faculty and bypassing that. This is a whole different area. But essentially, there is often a message of my needs are more important than others. If that is the golden thread that is taken through, and if the contexts aren't separated, because we find interaction can be slightly different online as it is in face-to-face interaction. Not with everyone, but that is separating of a context.
That's true.
If it is not, and yes, if that is the golden thread that keeps getting pulled through, it is likely that it will lower empathy levels. Because it is, if the focus is solely on oneself, then classically, if we are not able to move that spotlight, if we can call it that, then it will be very difficult to empathize. And what we also find is the more that somebody is felt, it's a bit of a catch-22, but if somebody experienced something and they don't receive empathy, so nobody else puts themselves in their shoes, then they defend it stronger and their empathy is lower for others. And the other person will have the same thing, and it's a little bit of a escalated
and soon you find yourself in South Africa circa 2018.
There we go.
Which raises the question then, what we can do to develop our empathetic capacities. And I'm really excited to talk about some of the practical things. Mm. And just speaking for myself, I mean, I don't know, we're sort of like, we were all confessing this morning how much empathy we have for people who are very different to ourselves. Mm. And we had different responses in the team. We touched on, but didn't develop a conversation around, what does it take to develop your empathetic capacity? One of my producers was saying, for example, if you experience loss for the first time, that can sometimes be a switch in your head mm. that suddenly makes you more empathetic towards other people who experience different kinds of pain. For me, sideways, literature sometimes does that. Mm. You know, just learning to put yourself in someone else's shoes might come through, for example, the powerful experience of watching a film that is a really good film mm. or a book. So if there are parents listening, for example, you've got little kids mm. who think that the whole world revolves around little Johnny, what are the kinds of practical things that we need to get into?
Yes, okay. Let me start from a global level, if I can say, or a meta perspective. Essentially, when we broaden our frame of reference to include empathy, we have to have experienced something that was strong enough to start and allowing us to see something differently, mm. To change the way we view it, to expand it a little bit. For you, it's literature. For somebody else, it's a movie. For somebody else, they have a lived experience that challenges their view. Mm. But the higher the impact, the more likely we have what we call an emotional corrective. Mm. So when we have that, it will change our frame of reference. Mm. So you may experience a loss that is so dramatic that you then are open to putting yourself in somebody else's shoes. You may have been cornered by a behavior you've done in your life that has created damage towards you because of lack of empathy. Mm. Then you are primed to open up to it. Mm. Or it may be something like that in a particular mood, watching a movie, reading a book, hearing about something, and it's described in such crisp detail that it really touches you. Then from that moment, you now see the world from somebody else's eyes. Then mm. it's possible. Mm. So there's a myriad of possibilities, each depending on individuals, contexts, and. But the golden key, if I can say, is if we experience it for ourselves as moving, and it includes understanding somebody else, that's how we begin to open up. Mm. Because it's partly intellectual, but partly emotional.
Absolutely.
When changing human behavior in this type of way, mm. we must feel it. It must move. That is how we... Yeah.
7:02 and Cape Talk. Family Matters.
28 minutes before noon, we're having a fantastic conversation with Hayden Nibbs, who's a clinical psychologist, about empathy. And I think this one is a deep challenge to all of us because we tend to center ourselves, particularly in the marketplace of ideas, the hurly-burly of an open line conversation, political discourse, our specific interests as white people, black people, poor people, degreed professionals, gay people, straight people. And I think that's the context in which this conversation is landing. So for me, if it's a bit of a weird change in tone from the first 2 hours of the show today to this conversation that demands of us to dig deep and to ask yourself, how deep does your empathetic capacity run for people who look very different to yourself? Can you answer that question honestly? Do you struggle to empathize with people that live on the other side of the city, that have a different linguistic identity to your own, for example? Do you struggle? And Hayden was talking about experiences that can not just intellectually but also emotionally suddenly expand your capacity to empathize with other people. Have you had such an experience? Share it with us if you have. And if you are struggling with empathy and you've got a question for our expert, the lines are open on 011-883-0702 and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. I want to pause over some of those things that you had listed that seem to me to be absolutely incredible. And I want to ask you on a personal level for yourself, does your training help, or can one be a clinical psychologist and have low levels of empathy? What makes you particularly empathetic?
Certainly the training, I'd like to think I had fairly high levels of empathy as well, but very difficult to know. But yes, as a clinician, one has to have. It's because if you cannot put yourself in others' shoes and you cannot understand them, that's almost, I would say empathy almost becomes the basis of a therapeutic stance. Mm. Because that sure, if I'm honest, clinically we utilize
probably
empathy.
Precondition for doing your clinical work?
Yes. In fact, it's for those applying at master's level, it is one of the things that will be watched for if there are sufficient levels of empathy within the candidates.
James, welcome to the conversation.
Hi.
Hi, James. Go ahead.
I'd just like to say very quickly that I think inequality has created a wider gap between people from an economic point of view. But I also believe that our upward mobility from a financial point of view has also increased that gap, if that makes any sense to you. I was brought up to be empathetic towards my neighbor and the people that I lived around. But I feel like our society right now, as we, climb the gap between us and being able to put ourselves in shoes of people that may not have been, that may not be able to afford the things that we can, et cetera, et cetera. It seems like that ability is becoming thinner and thinner. So I don't know what the relationship between empathy and upward mobility is. I was, as I'm saying, I was taught to be empathetic and to try and put myself in other people's shoes when I was growing up. Now, with what I see happening around me, it feels like that is not happening anymore. So is there a relationship, the fact that people are now, can afford to live in better neighborhoods, take their kids to better, to better schools and have more money, does that mean now that we must be less empathetic, or are these people now living a completely different lifestyle to sort of be able to forget what it is, to be in a certain situation? So for me, it links back to the conversation you were having with someone, like, I think a couple of weeks ago, about the fact that if I have made it, in inverted commas, we tend to think that we are, we are the be-all and end-all because we've made it. But the reality of the situation is that there's so many things that come into you making it, your context being one of them, and the situation that's into ultimately.
Okay. Let's keep it to the core question. Thanks for calling in, James. Interesting question there about what happens when people become upwardly mobile.
Yes. Yeah, just to answer James, if I look at that and I translate it sort of into a clinical picture, when you're referring to being upwardly mobile, there's two clinically relevant elements that are occurring there. You are becoming more distant from other individuals. So if we increase the distance, yes, it becomes more difficult to empathize. The closer we are to somebody, the more we understand them, the more we're exposed, the more we hear them and see their frame of reference, the easier it becomes to put ourselves in their shoes. Mm. Because there's a detailed nuance behind it, behind our understanding. The further distant we are, the more we have to imagine or guess, and there we can perhaps be wrong. There's also, if I'm understanding, this upward mobility means that, if I can translate it, it sounds as though the goals are changing, and for purposes of this conversation, we will say that there the frame of reference is becoming more and more distinct.
Sure.
Now, if you have, obviously everyone's frame of reference is different, if one frame of reference is the polar opposite to another, it is more difficult to put yourself in that shoes, because the distance is greater, their views are so much different to yours, what is important, what they're focusing on, so on and so forth. So there it does become more challenging to have empathy. That doesn't mean that you cannot. It doesn't mean that you cannot create closeness if you wish. It doesn't mean that you cannot just simply imagine what it would be like. In this kind of example, from what James was saying, my understanding was that these two frames began at the beginning at the same place. So there you can even just imagine what it was like back when you were there and how it would have been if you'd been able to move up or whatever. So empathy can still exist, but it is true. If the new frame of reference adopted doesn't require the focus on somebody else, it will probably lower the levels of empathy.
I think sometimes people, tell me if I'm being glib here from a psychological point of view, Hayden. I think sometimes people are just lazy, man. They're just not trying very hard enough to understand people who are very different to themselves. So you find someone immediately being able to have empathy for a victim of racism. Mm. Then you just ask them a question about gender discrimination or discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. Then they go all awkward. Mm. And then eventually someone might say, as they're out, when you are testing their consistency, as you heard the other day when we had that conversation on the open line, then they'll say, well, I don't know. I mean, I'm not a woman. You can't blah, blah, blah. You know, and then they become incoherent. Yes. Well, I'm not gay, so I can't identify with your kind of like oppression. Well, I don't have to be raped in order to have empathy for rape survivors, right?
Absolutely.
So what is it in my resources psychologically that I have that enables me to be able to empathize with people who've had life experiences that I have not directly had myself?
Yep. Sometimes it actually comes under that frame of reference. So our frame of reference, the way we see the world, where our moral judgments lie, and our view is whatever it is. Some people's are broader, some people's are narrower. So if something comes outside or an experience we haven't had, we classically view it through that frame. Of course, it is the only thing we can view it through. And if we can find similarities or something close to it, we are more likely to be able to empathize. So if it is too far from our frame, we have exactly what you've described, almost that falling apart. Oh, well, I can't. But we can facilitate it to come closer. For example, somebody that has no empathy for you mentioned, let's say, homosexual struggles or oppression. Mm. So for them, heterosexual relationships is the only thing. They can't even see their frame. It does not include that. So instead of saying, what we'll do is we'll include their frame in facilitating the empathy. So you would say, imagine you are attracted to female. If you're a male, you're attracted to females. And imagine this is what you are. You're always attracted. But imagine the world tells you you are never allowed to be. You want to form a relationship with somebody, but everyone says it is wrong. You feel that every single day. How would it feel for you if I told you you are a useless, less of a person because of it? What will you do? What would that be like? Just imagine that for a second. So that would be closer to their frame. They might still fight it. No, but it's not that. But if we can get them to start facilitating that, okay, we would change it therapeutically. We would go further. But this would be the concept. You try and bring it nearer to what their frame of reference is. Once that understanding is, you can start to expand it and build. So that the frame can be expanded or that empathy can be facilitated.
And I think that's why what you said earlier to me is so important about the emotional element. Because in that conversation, the person may end up going quiet because intellectually the penny has dropped. Hmm. But 5 minutes later on the street, in the shopping mall, they may not display empathy.
Yes, can be.
And the question is how? And I would imagine, like any skill set, you need to develop. If you're not in the habit of being empathetic, you need to practice, and you may need to be primed, whether it be a fantastic piece of music, glass of red wine, whether it's cheesy township tourism that's no longer all the rage. But you know what I mean? Like that experiential element seems to me like the emotional glue that must go with the intellectual penny. Because I've seen this game. I mean, I've stopped giving lectures on why homophobia is unethical.
Yes.
Because I've realized that someone may not be able to argue back against me, but they can still discriminate against their gay brother.
Yes.
And there's a gap there between sometimes the cognitive understanding and effect or emotion.
Absolutely. And yes, you're absolutely correct. That gap is something that becomes the challenge. If it was easily facilitated intellectually, then this problem or human interaction would be solved fairly quickly. So it is to facilitate that emotional experience, or at least the connection between the cognition and the emotional experience.
Absolutely.
100%.
Gene, good morning.
Morning. Eusebius.
Good morning. Welcome.
Hello.
Go ahead. We can hear you.
My name is Jean. I have spoken before to you. I just wanted to agree with Hayden. We lost a son 15 years ago, and definitely my empathy improved tenfold with other people that, you know, had experienced the loss of a child. And then getting into Al-Anon 25 years ago, because my husband was alcoholic, opened up new avenues for empathy. And the whole Al-Anon and AA 12-step program teaches you valuable lessons in empathy. So that's all I wanted to say. And to thank you for opening up conversations like this.
Thank you, Jean. Thank you for sharing those examples. I really do appreciate them. We're obviously not romanticizing pain, but it is interesting what can come out of painful experiences.
Absolutely. Yes, by no means is it a romantic concept, but it is certainly growth and meaning can be facilitated, and empathy can be facilitated from a loss. I mean, hopefully that is not is what is required.
Sure.
But certainly it can be. It expands our frame. It acts like a bit of a jolt that hits us and expands our frame. But yes, it certainly can.
Dustin, good morning.
Hi. I just had a kind of academic question about it, in the sense that, you know, we talk about empathy and being able to so empathize with other people, but in conflict with that is your kind of fight or flight system. You know, if you're fighting for your life, you tend to consider only yourself, and it just relates back to that comment about are people lazy or if they don't care. But you could almost argue that, especially South Africa at the moment, has a lot of post-traumatic stress syndrome, or is in a state of stress because of what's going on with government and politics. And sometimes it makes it hard for people to empathize because all they're focused on is their own survival. And so it's kind of inversely proportional with empathy.
Interesting thought.
Yeah, Dustin, so that's true.
Thanks, Dustin.
Well, let's put it like this. When we are under threat, classically, anything, perceived, real threat, whatever, it pulls us further and further into our frame of reference, our own one, and makes empathy more challenging. So it is true, whenever we are perceiving something as hostile around us, the challenge of empathy is much greater. It is also when we are defending something. That's why you'll classically see two people arguing about something, and neither will be able to put themselves in the other's shoes. They are trying to argue their point first. If you understand me first, I'll understand you second. But you know, there it goes circularly, and rightly so. Okay, one can debate the levels of what he's referring to as post-traumatic stress and all of that.
Sure.
But even, you know, on any scale, the principle is accurate. The more we feel under threat, or the more we feel unheard, the higher the challenge is to empathize. But it does not mean that empathy cannot be achieved, and it does not get us off the hook, in my opinion. It still is a concept that exists, whether we want to accept it or not, and it still is the cornerstone of human behavior.
You know, there's also something interesting that a counselor of mine has been talking to me about, which is when we have the kind of response that Dustin is talking about, and you become all type A and you want to fight. Mm. The irony is that even though that comes from an existential place, I want to survive this perceived threat, that ironically enough, one of the ways in which to best survive it, but it doesn't, we're not programmed in this kind of way socially, is actually to adopt the empathetic stance.
100%.
And allowing yourself to be vulnerable, because normally when you're aggressive, there's normally an underlying sense of vulnerability that you're trying to deal with. And it's amazing, particularly if you're in a leadership position in a team, in an organization, how much more likely you are to diffuse whatever the threat is.
Absolutely.
But we don't seem to be socialized in that kind of way.
Absolutely. It is exactly what you're saying is 100% accurate, clinically speaking. You are more likely to elicit hostility if you have lower levels of empathy. You are more likely to survive. You're more likely to be safe. You're more likely to stop the threat if you give empathy. So all of what you're saying is true, and it is also true we do not get socialized. It is actually the basis of psychology and interaction. I'm surprised that it's not taught in schools, frankly, or an understanding of how emotions work and empathy's role within it. But yeah, we don't.
Stunning. 13 minutes before noon. Jill, we're going to take your call on the other side of this.
And Kate Talk. Family Matters.
And today we're talking about empathy. What is it? How do we develop our empathetic capacities? And if we had more empathy for one another, I think we'd make better progress in dealing with a lot of the crises in society. Clinical psychologist Hayden Nipps is still with us. Jill, good morning.
Morning, Peters. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear. Welcome to the show.
Great. Thank you so much. So I maybe have an oversimplistic view of empathy, but I think it is the development of a moral and emotional conscience when you are a child. And also, you do not have to, in my opinion, have been subjected to rape, be a homosexual, have been experienced massive violence, been starved, to be able to empathize, to put yourself in somebody's shoes and wonder what your life would be like and how you would react and treat the situation accordingly. We have become, in my opinion, completely desensitized to everything. The world is full of violence, and it's all about the individual and what they can have and self-gratification. And empathy should be something that is inherent and should be developed, but it is not something that you need to experience those life horrors.
Oh,
a really strong sense of empathy.
Okay, the line just cutting there, but thank you for that, Joel, which is exactly the last sort of one of the last things I wanted to talk to Hayden about. Are we inherently empathetic? Presumably, as with language, the capacity is inherent, but it has to be activated and practiced.
Yes. Okay. Well, a few things there. What Jill was referring to, saying that our moral development, it's not quite empathy. It can include empathy, part of our moral development, but it could also not. But yes, are we are naturally, inherently, or there are exceptions that we find within the human population.
Mm-hmm.
You can get to that if you like. That's more psychopathy. But besides that, we are inherently open to empathy. Similar to language, but even if we didn't learn language, even if we didn't learn anything, we can still develop empathy. It is part of survival development that we are able to connect and understand other things around us and other people around us to connect with them. So, yeah, it is, in fact, a natural human functioning.
Empathy. What can you do with this sounds like a dangerous question taken out of context. What can you do with kids? What can you do to make sure that children develop empathetic capacity? I mean, the first couple of years is a write-off. The world revolves around them, right?
That's true. Yes. It is to start to teach them, to share with them experiences, to say to them, how would you feel if that happened to you? To expose them to different people's perspectives, to teach them that the world is not just from their view. This is the kind of lessons that we show children as they go. And actually, you can create a lot of harmony and a lot of joy within them. Joy is strongly connected to empathy. We're not talking about a self-sacrificial kind of a life with deep levels of empathy. But it is to show one's child that that other people exist and they see the world differently and they experience things differently. And it is okay. No one, there's nothing that is righter than the other. It is simply what they see in their view. And it can also be true along with what another.
How useful is experiential learning to develop empathy? Because
extremely.
I mean, but it's like so much where we throw the baby out with the bathwater. Pardon the pun, falling on the question from children. But experiential learning, that used to be a very key tool for all kinds of learning, particularly in professional, diverse environments. Now you have thought pieces, quote unquote, dissing experiential learning as sort of like inauthentic moments where you take someone into out of their comfort zone. And I kind of like struggle with that critique, because as I'm listening to you throughout this hour, Hayden, I'm thinking to myself, to narrow that gap between understanding the importance of empathy intellectually and actually being a more empathetic human, experience seems key of different, diverse environments.
Absolutely key, especially if you're talking about diverse environments. If we look in that example, if we look clinically at what we do when it comes to diversity programs, if we have, let's say for argument's sake, different racial groups that are struggling to coexist or work together, we facilitate closeness between them. We show them on an impact level, they feel that this person from a different group is actually the same as me. We're all people. We show the similarities and we build that closeness. There we facilitate the empathy between it. So that is pure experiential. To do it as an intellectual exercise is likely to just be wasted. You might be able to understand the concept, but it will not change. It will not. Human change must include emotional experience. It is not just an intellectual exercise. If you want behavioral change and you want to expand a frame of reference, then it is essential.
And what is in the psychologist's toolkit? Because there are also lots of stuff that's gimmicky. I think that's where some of the some of the cynicism come from. You know, you go in these junkets where someone will say to Ray White, imagine waking up as Eusebius tomorrow morning. And you're like, well, I mean, that's not like how much, you know, what is that going to do? So,
no, it is obviously context specific, but within a treatment perspective, therapeutically, psychologists trained to utilize a myriad of therapeutic techniques to facilitate whatever is indicated. If empathy is what's indicated, then there is lots of different types of treatments that we use. By our ethical code, have to stay away from gimmicks. So we are not allowed to use something that is not scientifically proven to work.
The last thing I wanted to ask you about is, because we kept referencing but not talking in detail about it, that you can also obviously work in the therapeutic context with a range of tools. Are there people who have clinically low levels of empathy?
As in clinical psychologists, or therapists? Here is a bit of a difficult one. Classically, no. They're not supposed to. But I mean, I guess it's also on the same level of, are there any cops that commit crime? You know, it's things, I suppose, do happen. As well, which I suppose is not really meant to be the common view, but clinicians are also human beings, and levels of empathy do oscillate.
No, I don't mean so much in the practitioner. I'm talking about us as the patients.
Yes.
Is it typically a psychopath, for example, who lacks complete empathy? Is that a key feature of why someone may end up...
Psychopaths do lack empathy, all people have different levels of empathy, and they do fluctuate anyway, daily or over months or whatever experiences. If somebody, for example, is going through a lot of turmoil, they are classically less empathic. But yes, rightly put, psychopaths tend to not have any empathy whatsoever. And the development of empathy with psychopaths, actually, classically, the research says they don't develop empathy. But my experience, they actually can learn it. They don't feel it, but they use it as a tool to manipulate. So they are able to play with it and move people around. But they don't actually experience what it is to be in somebody else's shoes. They just know, or they can learn, that it is a powerful tool to manipulate.
Okay. But that makes sense. That makes perfect sense. Adam, thank you so much for coming in. Thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. Thanks so much for coming to the studio.
Thank you for having me.